I'm Francesca Rhiannon. The New York primary was won by Hillary Clinton, although hundreds of thousands of voters in areas thought to favor Bernie Sanders were mysteriously thrown off the voter rolls, especially in Brooklyn, Nassau, and Suffolk counties. But upstate, where fewer voters were purged, Sanders won. He enjoyed an advantage in the polls coming up to the primary also. That could be because of one key issue, fracking. It's also a critically important issue to Pennsylvania, whose primary is on April 26. I spoke with journalist Maura Stevens about the fracking issue, its impact on both Pennsylvania and New York, and the Democratic candidates' differing positions on the issue. Maura Stevens is a founding member of the Coalition to Protect New York and FrackBustersNewYork.org. Well, Maura Stevens, welcome to Writer's Voice.
Thank you so much, Francesca.
You are an organizer of the Coalition to Protect New York and FrackBustersNewYork.org. Tell us just very briefly about these two organizations.
Coalition to Protect New York was founded in 2010 after a large number of people from around the central part of New York State, that is from approximately Binghamton in the southeast to Oneida County in the northeast, all the way over to the far west of the state and along the southern tier, got together alarmed at the prospect of fracking coming to New York State from as we had been seeing our neighbors to the south in Pennsylvania starting to feel really ravaged by this heavy industrial activity that nobody had ever heard of because it had really never been done before. We realized pretty quickly that the fossil fuel industry was trying to hoodwink the public into thinking it was a benign fossil fuel extraction process. So we formed to find out more about fracking, to do more research, to see if perhaps we were wrong and that there was a better way of doing it. Soon realized that there wasn't, became very close to a lot of people in Pennsylvania who were having health issues and property value issues and other things. And so we formed around that process. And FrackBusters, about a year later, formed, taking this to a different level, thinking that you can't really fight corporate marauders in your communities unless you have something to punish them with, because we were seeing all these fines being placed on corporations in Pennsylvania that were polluting streams, polluting people's water wells, toxifying the air, making people sick, and they might be slapped with a little fine of $5,000 here, $5,000 there, when they were causing irreparable harm to people. And we realized they were just taking that as a cost of doing business. You know, it was a tax write-off, and it was an insurance claim to them, and yet it was people's lives, children's health, people's whole livelihoods. So we came up with a pretty novel approach, which was considered very radical in the beginning, of criminalizing fracking.
I went to your website for the Coalition to Protect New York, and I started reading an incredible story there, which is a story about Megan Holleran's family and eminent domain. Could you tell us what's going on with this family and how the law is being applied by the pipeline to destroy their livelihood?
Well, the Holleran family is just one of scores, perhaps hundreds of families that are going through this right now, but it's a wonderful family and a heartbreaking story. Megan and her family have a really beautiful piece of property in Montrose, Pennsylvania, just south of Binghamton, New York. And it's just a pristine, gorgeous piece of property. It's a hillside and a beautiful maple stand, and they've been tapping maple trees to boil the sap to make syrup for many, many years. And the Constitution pipeline there are so many pipelines threatening so many communities, it's a little hard to keep track of them all, but the Constitution pipeline was going from Pennsylvania through several counties in New York State up through near Binghamton. And the pipeline was permitted, as almost all of them are, FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is responsible for interstate pipelines permitting. And it had been permitted in Pennsylvania, but not yet in New York. So the families, many families had sold out or you know, accepted this paltry sum of money for the pipeline to go through their property. But the Hollerins and many other people were adamantly opposed to it. The Hollerins fought as much as they could. They did all the legal appeals and all the filed all the paperwork and all the things saying that this would be irreparable harm to their business. They wanted to cut through the maple stand right at maple syruping time, so they would have lost their entire income for this year as well as all future years from that operation. And they held out. Hundreds of people came to stand with them in the cold and the snow for weeks on end. I was among them, and it was a beautiful outpouring of support and fellowship, but it failed. And the courts ordered that the devastation of the trees could begin, even though there was no permit for the actual pipeline to continue into New York State. Many miles of trees have been cut down, thousands and thousands of carbon-capturing trees, life-giving trees, syrup-giving trees, habitat for other creatures have been cut down for this pipeline that may or may not ever be put in. And it was done, the last order was given to make it happen. They told the peaceful resistors that they would be jailed if they resisted any further. They sent out SWAT teams with all sorts of weapons to make sure that nobody got in the way of the chainsaws. It was absolutely devastating for the family and all those who were trying to protect the natural environment. And also,
aside from the ecological damage and the damage to the livelihood of the Halloran family, they were not even offered any compensation. Is that correct?
No. The eminent domain, which is a legal construct in which a government is able to seize someone's property, must compensate them. There's no real specific. It says fairly compensate them for the what is taken, but it's supposed to be used for a public good, such as a hospital or a highway or a railway or something that's going to bring good to the public in the community in which it's passing through. In this case, the gas that's going to be passing through, volatile gas, very close to homes, which does leak. You know, people say it potentially leaks. Well, that's because scientists are so careful not to say it will, because nobody can predict what will happen. But heavens, it will, because it always does, and it always has, and there's no way to make it not leak. And it's volatile, and it's very likely that some of these will explode at some point along the way, because there's so many compressor stations and so many other places where leakages and accidents can occur. And we're seeing that companies are being less and less, or more and more lax and less careful about safety as their profits become more important. But this gas is all intended, it's going outside Pennsylvania. These communities are getting nothing in compensation for it. But they do get some small, what I would say, kind of chump change, because their whole history of their family, which has been there for many years, is being wiped out. So you can't really compensate for that.
Now, we've been talking about Pennsylvania, but you are in New York, and you're fighting this on part of the Coalition for New York. What's New York's interest in this?
Well, I believe that the people in this movement really feel like we're all in this together, because it is all one pipeline. And we know our neighbors to the south. They've been coming up here to try and help us alert our communities to what's happening to them and to keep us from suffering the same tragedies that they're suffering, health tragedies, loss of their homes, loss of their livelihoods, loss of their way of life and their dreams, really. We know so many people who've come up here and given their time and effort to come and help us avoid that, and we feel very responsible to them, and we really are all in this together. You know, the climate isn't going to pick the rich people on Long Island to protect, you know, or the rich people in some other community to protect. We're all becoming equalized in this time of radical climate revolution.
I'm Francesca Rhiannon, host of Writer's Voice. I'm speaking with Maura Stevens of Frackbusters New York about the fracking issue and its impact on both Pennsylvania and New York. I spoke with her just before the New York primary. The Pennsylvania primary is on April 26. Your group is working on issues. The other organization that you work with, Frackbusters New York, makes some, I think, pretty important points. One thing, when I went to the website to look at it, I was surprised to see that the so-called ban on fracking is not really a ban on fracking, and nor is it even a moratorium on all fracking. So explain to us what kind of risks we face here. What's going on in New York? What about this so-called ban?
Well, I think that many anti-fracking activists rightly celebrated when the governor agreed with the medical assessment that fracking should not be done per se right away. But we're talking, we should have mentioned up front that the way we identify fracking, the way we define it, is not just the fracking itself, where millions of gallons of pure fresh water are toxified with numerous chemicals, including endocrine disruptors and neurotoxins and carcinogens, and then blasted down into shale or sand to extract little tiny bubbles of methane. But because that is what the industry defines fracking as, we define it as further. It's everything from the exploitation when they do seismic testing in an area to find out if they can find enough gas to make it worth their while to come in and do the actual fracking, all the way to your kitchen stove, and then all the other things that are fractured along the way, such as our health, our air, our water supplies, our food supply, and indeed our legislatures and our judicial system, because those are enabling these devastating industrial activities to come through our communities. So it's a whole fracture, you know, includes the media, which are also involved, except for independent media like you, and the ones that I work for as a journalist. Most of them are just towing the line of the corporation. But the horizontal, high-volume horizontal hydrofracking, which is this very new technology, was developed in the 90s and only started to be used in our area in this century. That fracking has been banned. It really hasn't been banned. There's a sort of a temporary extension of the moratorium, because the minute the legislature decides that they want to overrule the governor, or a new governor is elected, you know, that could change. So any kind of ban like that is, you know, celebrated as a ban, people need to be careful, because as this so-called fracking ban is imposed, we're having thousands of miles of pipelines going crisscrossing New York State. And, you know, they've been trying to put the Port Ambrose, fortunately that right off the coast of Long Island, Port Ambrose export terminal was defeated for now, thanks to the good work of the great people in New York City and Long Island who are actively working against that kind of thing. But meanwhile, we have toxic waste dumping in New York State landfills, and it's radioactive frack waste from Pennsylvania. The one just 15 miles from my home in Chemung County, New York, they're trying to expand it, double the size of it, to take more radioactive frack waste from Pennsylvania and other places. And although the people have been going to the legislature month after month after month, 98% of them saying, do not want this expansion. In fact, we want to take this dump down altogether and get rid of it. The legislature is completely deaf to their pleas, and it just goes along with whatever the corporations want. So we're seeing this fracturing of our legislatures up close and personal in our own towns and counties.
The Frackbusters New York website also says that the moratorium that Governor Cuomo has imposed could be reversed.
Right. It could be reversed. All these protections are very fragile. Our systems are so fluid and so subject to whim and political pressure. And indeed, you know, just imagine if the Trans-Pacific Partnership goes through. This is one of the things that terrifies us the most. This transnational agreement would enable a foreign corporation to essentially say, this community is banning something that we want to do, and that is not acceptable, so we have the power to come in and tell that community that tough luck, you have to take it, whatever it is that we're going to do. We're going to dump toxic waste near your school, or, you know, there are the provisions in the TPP and the secrecy with which it's all been negotiated and will continue to be run. If that Trans-Pacific Partnership goes through, we, you know, even in our own communities, it's not simply a global issue. It's a really local issue that people should get up to speed on. It's a complicated issue, but the simple fact is we are vulnerable to corporate control from corporations, even outside, that are based outside our country and have no U.S. laws and local laws have no bearing on these companies. They've become very powerful.
So it's this attack on national, state, and local sovereignty.
Exactly.
Now, another thing is that now I understand that the moratorium does not apply to all fracking, just high volume.
Right. There is still low volume horizontal fracking going on, so companies can... I actually don't want to be quoted on the number because I think the number has changed of how many gallons can be considered high volume. But, of course, that's another thing that's fluid. So the law, the rules change as the corporations need different things and buy different legislators to enable their insidious shenanigans. But, yes, and then vertical drilling is still permitted. So there is still some drilling going on in the state. What's particularly interesting is that New York State is not a mining state. You know, other states have surface ownership by the homeowner, and everything under their home and land is owned by the state. So the state can sell it off to whatever mineral company they want. Like Texas and Oklahoma, even Pennsylvania, where coal mining has been going on forever. But New York State is not accustomed to this, and we don't. This is a total assault on our on everything. We're just not, you know, Western states, it's not so uncommon to have that kind of split estate, as it's called. But here, we've never had that. And having seen what it does elsewhere, we don't want it. And it's not just a NIMBY thing, because we do want to, we recognize that the air and water aren't subject to political boundaries. And the climate is affecting us all, and we all, in the places that still have clean, fresh water, which are the places to which other people are going to be migrating, we desperately have to protect the water there. So all of New York State is blessed with beautiful, fresh water. And for us to even consider fracking it is simply insane. And now with pipelines going in around the nuclear power plant at Indian Point, which is ancient and crumbling and has been leaking and having some fires lately, scary. And then three pipelines going, one pipeline going within a few yards of it, and another two going within a couple miles of it. And all of that area is in a seismic fault called the Ramapo. It's more insane than it's just insane that anybody's even contemplating one of those things. Oh, and I forgot to mention the bomb trains that go up and down the Hudson on the rail lines that traverse from Albany. You know, it's just like a series of terrible things waiting to happen.
The bomb trains?
Yes, the trains that, you know, car after car that are filled with bitumen from the tar sands of Canada and crude oil that are completely explosive, and they go through, they sit for sometimes for days right next to, if you go to Albany, I was taken on a tour of the area where there's a child's playground and a school just yards away from this, where they park these highly explosive, deadly trains full of gas, and they go down, you know, through New York City, past my sister's house in Pennsylvania. And I don't know where they end up, actually, to tell you the truth. I think they end up in Virginia, but just being near them gives me heart palpitations. I can't even imagine what it's like for the mother of children living in one of the apartments in a poor, mostly African-American community, I might add, in Albany, where they're parked for, there seems to be their switching station, and they park there for quite a while.
Wow. So, it sounds pretty difficult. Now, just very briefly, you actually are in favor, your organization, Maura Stevens, is in favor of the passage of this law, New York Public Law 1. What would this law do?
Well, people a few years ago considered it very radical. I think now more and more people are believing that it makes sense. It makes fracking and related industrial activities crimes in New York state law. And that means that the people driving the trucks and drilling the rigs are not the ones, the criminals. It's the corporations themselves. The corporations used to be chartered by the state, and when they stopped doing the business of the people, their charter was revoked. We want to bring that back. That's the way corporations began in this country. And corporations, top-level executives and board members who are found guilty of these crimes are not only given a hefty fine, a really hefty fine, but also mandatory jail time. And we believe these people are criminals in reality, and they should be criminals in the law. And FrackbustersNY.org, we were considered radical, but as more and more people try to work through the system and they think the system is going to work for them, they realize that it's been rigged against them. No matter how many letters they write to the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, or the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or the governor, or their legislators, they're being ignored. And indeed, they're treated with scorn. If you go to a FERC meeting, oh my goodness, it's just shocking how we, the public, are treated like fleas, you know? They don't care about us. They practically smirk every time we say anything because they know it's a done deal. And if we're trying to protect our communities, we can't do it through those systems, so we have to make some different law. We can't keep being cattle walking through a chute and saying, okay, lead me to slaughter, because that's what they're doing. And our children's lives are at stake. Our future's at stake. We cannot be sheep.
Well, that's powerful. So we have a very important primary coming up on Tuesday. Tell us where the two candidates stand on the issue of fracking.
They're light years apart. Hillary Clinton is pushing fracking as what she calls a bridge fuel to a renewable future, which is exactly the line that the industry has been giving us for the past decade. She buys that line. She's obviously tight with the industry. She's taken a lot of money from oil and gas corporations as BP and others. She's pushing it around the world, actually. And Bernie is the only candidate who's come out strongly against fracking in all related industries. And, nobody's perfect on everything because we've all thought at one time that one thing was good and then we learned that it wasn't and we've changed our position. He's done that. Hillary Clinton is now sort of backpedaling on her pushing of fracking, but doesn't seem like an honest backpedaling to me. And it, you know, actions speak louder than words. I don't think that a really strong environmentalist person could really back her with her record and her coziness with Wall Street. And, that's how it is on fracking and fossil fuels.
Maura Stevens. She's a founding member of the Coalition to Protect New York and FrackbustersNewYork.org. I'm Francesca Rhiannon.